today we're gathered here for the announcement of the Kia NBA Most Valuable Player Award, an award that has been bestowed to only 29 players in the storied history of the NBA, and never until today has happened to a player for the Miami Heat. He is already an 8-time NBA All-Star, and now he enters another realm of NBA history. He becomes a 3-time winner of this prestigious award, an award he has now won 3 times in the last 4 seasons. Ladies and gentlemen, and to the entire world, the 2011-2012 Kia NBA Most Valuable Player, LeBron James.
First of all, to LeBron, congratulations on behalf of the Heat, obviously Mickey and Madeline, Nick, the Harrison family. We love you. Not just because of this, but because of what you mean to our organization.
We don't take it for granted, and we all feel so honored to be here up on stage. He wanted us all to be up here with him, you know, for this moment. But it's special, and it's the good. We say this all the time, right? It's the good, it's the bad, and it's everything in between. We're all there for you for this whole ride, and we love you, and we're so very proud of you, okay?
I never dreamt about being an NBA Most Valuable Player. I never dreamt about, doing the things that I do now at a high level. So now that they're hitting me now, and it's happening, it's overwhelming. I got so many people that's helped me get to this point, and without them, I wouldn't be standing up here in front of you guys. So even though this is an individual award, even though my name is on this individual award, it's not just my award. My family, like I said, my family, my friends, and everyone that had something to do with me getting to this point should feel this award as well.
This is the Hot Out Hoops podcast, second round edition of the 2012 postseason. I'm here, that's Siri Fernandez, along with my fellow writer from Hot Out Hoops, Diego. How's it going, man?
It's going well. How's it going with you?
Good, good. And I don't want to confuse people because this podcast is on Peninsula's Mightier, even though Hot Out Hoops will be back, but we're on a hiatus while we make the new site. But we're happy to be on SB Nation, and I'm pretty psyched about the new change. What about you?
Yeah, I am. It's a good change, not only to move to SB Nation, but also have the help of some other writers, and hopefully we'll have other writers contributing to the blog as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And we'll have them on a podcast as well. And it'll be extra coverage. You're going to have more participation from them. So it's going to be fun. And I'm excited as well.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about this next series with the Indiana Pacers. They're already talking a little bit of a smack.
Yeah.
And at practice yesterday, the players just collectively shrugged their shoulders. And they're like, okay, bring it on. And we'll see you on the court, basically. What were your thoughts about what Vogel said?
Yeah, well, for those of you that don't know, Frank Vogel, who was the Indiana Pacers head coach, said that, the Heat are, I think he said, the biggest floppers in the league. To tell you the truth, the first thing that came to my mind when I heard that was in the run-up to the 06 finals, how some of the players on the Mavericks said that they were going to actually maybe give D. Wade his jump shot on those pick and rolls because they didn't thought he had that jump shot and they were just going to play him for the drive. And I think it was in, game 3 when the Heat had that big deficit that they had to overcome. Wade made a bunch of jump shots to bring the Heat back in that series and eventually win that series. So I think, it was just a little motivation maybe that he used to just bring the Heat back from the brink of really getting swept. But I think, when it comes to Vogel, I think he probably just said it just so that the officials in the games will know about it, so that maybe when Shane Battier or Haslam take a charge, they may think about it. I mean, it's something that I think people have done before. I think some people have said that when coaches or players are sort of jawing at the refs, it maybe help them get a, you know, quote unquote makeup call in the, you know, in the later in the game. So I think that's what he meant. But obviously it could end up motivating the Heat, as I think it was Chris Bosh who said that the Heat would take that comment and basically try to prove him wrong.
Yeah, I was in front of Haslam when he was told about these comments, and he was just shaking his head. He couldn't even come up with something to respond to that, because it's just what can a person say to that a Heat player? It's part of the game. I really don't think that the Heat are guilty of it as much as maybe like the Clippers. I think the consensus here is that the Clippers do it, because I mean, it's not even when they're taking charges. I mean, they could be setting a pick out in 3-point land, and they're flopping every which way. So I think that's the kind of flopping that gets people like Jeff Van Gundy up in arms. But I think if you make a solid defensive play, I mean, I don't know what Shane's supposed to do if somebody's flying towards him. He's supposed to keep his ground. So, I mean, I'm not going to say that there isn't a few times here and there that they do kind of try to sell the call. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't single out the Miami Heat as a team above any other team that does that. I think it's kind of just every team does that, but it's the Miami Heat. There's obviously more attention placed on everything that they do. But I think it was, a little out of line, but I also think that it's what you're saying. It's kind of how, like, a coach gets a technical foul to try to rile up his players and motivate them. I think it's more along those lines. But I don't know. I wouldn't, exactly the way you were saying with Wade. I wouldn't do much to piss off LeBron or Wade or the Miami Heat in general, because it could backfire, definitely.
Yeah, and I think I actually heard that Roy Hibbert actually said something too. I think it was along the lines, and of course I'm not taking it as a quote, but I think he said something along the lines of saying, you know, we drafted these players. We didn't just, you know, sign a bunch of superstars in one season.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't do it the easy way. The Miami Heat took the easy way out somehow by grabbing LeBron and Bosh and signing Mike Miller, re-signing Haslam. That's another one right there that I have a problem with that one as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that I haven't heard before. I mean, someone who is a fan of the Thunder once told me that same thing, but you know what I would tell him and what I would tell, Roy would be that the Heat have two guys on their roster, Haslam and Joel Anthony, who Pat Riley basically got off the scrap heap. There are players who the Heat first got, you know, to be summer league guys. Then they got to be players invited to the training camp. And then now there are nice niche players on the Heat. And, you know, you have other guys like Mario Chalmers, for example, and even Wade. You know, it's not as if the Heat just didn't draft these guys and sort of mold them into be the players that they are right now. I mean,
Norris Cole, who's to say that Terrell Harris maybe has a breakout season if they keep him around next year. Those are players that they groom, and it's not like other teams don't sign free agents or make trades. Yeah. I mean, just because the Bulls didn't sign Bosch or LeBron doesn't mean that they took the easy way out by signing Boozer, Rip Hamilton this season. It's frankly, it's kind of absurd just because player A is a bigger name than player B doesn't mean that the Heat took a bigger way out. They got what they wanted. The other teams didn't.
And I guarantee you this, that Larry Bird would have loved to have a chance to sit down with LeBron James in 2010 and make his pitch to him. That's why you saw when he became a free agent, you saw all of those GMs groveling over him, because he was the best player in the world and he was a free agent. So any GM would have been begging him to come join his team.
Yeah, I think the Knicks were interested in LeBron as well. Mm-hmm. the Clippers. There was a few teams. There was a few teams without with cap space that were interested in the MVP.
So
whatever. What about your thoughts on the series itself? Let's talk about the actual action on the court. How far do you see the series going?
Yeah, well, my pick is Miami in five. And I know that I think it was Charles Barkley who said that that the Pacers could give Miami some problems because they're a little bit bigger up front. And I'm not denying that, but I think what you'll see from the Heat is, you know, the Heat have started Chris Bosh at the five. And I think that will be an interesting dynamic throughout the series with Chris Bosh and Roy Hibbert throughout the series. I think you're going to see Miami try to take him away from the basket. Maybe Bosh gets some early jump shots. And just so he can honor Chris Bosh and get him away from the basket so that maybe that opens up the driving lanes for the other players. And on the other side, you're going to have to see Chris Bosh is really going to have to try to push Roy Hibbert out of the paint when he gets his entry passes so that he doesn't just, you know, turn around and make a simple layup because he is 7'2" with long arms. He's going to score a few times. But if Chris Bosh can just try to get him out of that post area, get him out of the paint, and try to make him take contested hook shots, contested jumpers, then he'll be in good shape. And I think it was Spo who said that we could see Ronnie Turiaf in this series. I think he could maybe come off the bench pretty early in some games if Roy Hibbert is just, you know, scoring a couple of baskets consecutively. But I think Miami will be fine with the bigger size of the Indiana Pacers. I think we're also going to see a little bit more of Haslam in this series than the first round. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I expect, of course, I know that Barkley said that Paul George and Danny Granger and some of those other players that they have can play, but I expect that we'll see Wade and the MVP, LeBron James, really come out and play well. And I expect the Heat to win the first two games, then get the split out in Indiana, and then close it out in Game 5, just as it happened in the last series.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's going to go down exactly like that. I think they'll get the split. Yeah, I mean, you look at their roster, and it is a good roster. There's a lot of depth. There's Barbosa, or you can look at a player like David West, and he's a good player. But it's not exactly like LeBron is just canceling out David West's production. I think it's on them to try to keep up with the Heat. I do see Haslam getting more minutes. Turiaf, hopefully, he's 100% healthy, and he can give his six fouls, a few rebounds here and there, and provide some energy off the bench. I'm looking forward to Joel Anthony having a good series as well. I think you're just going to need that kind of player that can win 50-50 balls, that can scrap. And the Heat need a Chris Bosh that can play up to his all-star potential, that was playing the way he was before the all-star break. He needs to have a really good series, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's important because if they do advance and they face a team like the Celtics, he needs to have a consistent 5-6 game stretch here. And it's not like he had a bad series with the Knicks, but it was a little up and down.
Yep.
If he can grab double-digit rebounds, if he can at least put in 15, 16 points average a game, hopefully you want more. That's a good series for Bosh. Just as long as of course Wade and LeBron do their thing. You're also expecting Mario to continue. He's been pretty good. He's had his moments here and there, but he's also had some bad moments here and there. But that's Chalmers. I think overall you take his production. I think he was pretty solid. So I see the Heat in five. I'm not going to say they're not going to break a sweat at all. It's going to be a tough series. I think they respect the Pacers. That's what they were focusing on. A lot of the reporters yesterday and today probably were just talking about the flopping comments and all that. And the Heat players, you know, they answered about it, but But more often than not, they kind of wanted to just focus on the fact that they do respect the Pacers. They're not going to look ahead further down the line. That would be foolish. But even still, it's hard for me to see the Pacers taking 2, 3, even 4 games like Barkley thinks that they could. I don't know. I mean, you'd have to see some kind of a disastrous series like the Bulls had against the Sixers for something like that to happen. I think right now the team is strong. You don't see anything like what the Lakers are going through with Bynum, and it's just they're kind of falling apart at the wrong time right now. I see the Heat unified. I see them healthy. I think it was good for them to take those games off by the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And I don't see the Pacers stopping them.
Yeah, and I think another thing to look for in this series will be how often Spo puts LeBron James at the four. I think at the MVP press conference, I think Spo said that he calls James 1 through 5 because he plays all 5 positions. And I think it will be interesting against a team that is a little bit bigger, that has some guys who are 6'10", 6'11", 7 feet tall, how much he's going to use him at the four. Because I think if he is at the four, then he has an advantage against some of their power forwards in terms of just his quickness. And I think he could beat a lot of those guys off the dribble.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, does Indiana downsize and maybe put Danny Granger at the four in response? Now that will play to Miami, and
definitely.
now you don't have that extra rebounding or that extra tall presence that you have on the Pacers. So that'll be an interesting watch. If you see maybe James, maybe take David West off the dribble for some quick baskets. If Vogel downsizes, and then that ends up neutralizing the Pacers' really one advantage in this whole series. I mean, I do know that maybe you could probably give them the point guard edge, but I don't really see a lot of advantages that they can really exploit in this series.
It just I'm thinking about it right now. The bench production probably in most games surpass the Heat's, but that's not really something you can see in the box score, because there's a lot of things that Shane or Anthony do that don't necessarily reflect on the box score. So even that is it's negligible. I really don't see that swinging the series in their direction. Going back to LeBron playing off the dribble, the only thing I don't want to see LeBron do is something that he wasn't doing so much this season, but the season before, is he puts his head down and they just get in front of him, and he gets called for an offensive foul because he's just kind of out of control. You want him to attack the basket, let the game come to him and not force the issue. Or what he could do is also attack the basket and maybe just last second give a little bounce pass to Bosch, who, if the defense is focusing on LeBron, if he has that kind of court vision and, like I said, doesn't put his head down and just try to do everything, because the Pacers are smart. They can do that. They can take that away from him. But I think LeBron is playing on another level right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now he's just going to be extra motivated with the official trophy presentation tomorrow, I guess, with David Stern. I think that's going to be before the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I expect him to have a monster game tomorrow. And a monster series as well. I really don't see any LeBron stopper on their team. I see a collection of solid players. Obviously they have what I want to say 3 current or former All-Stars on their team, but I really don't see like I said them just having their way with the Heat. I think it's going to be a good series. But yeah, it's going to be Heat in 5. That's what I think as well.
And as far, just to touch on your comment about the bench, one thing I'll be looking for is how much of those bench players and even just anyone outside of the big three do they show up on the road? Because we saw in the last series, Chalmers showed up in game four, but it was pretty much the big three and Chalmers in that game. And then in game four, it was basically the big three without any help from anyone else on the roster. I mean, you saw Mike Miller hit a couple of threes in games one, two, and five, but really didn't show anything in the two games in New York. Now, that's something that I want. I mean, I know that people say role players play better at home than on the road, but I think they have to show something. I mean, those open shots that Mike Miller was missing in New York, he still got those same looks in Miami. He just needs to put it down.
Yeah, and I think overall too, I think as good as the Heat are playing, there are stretches of games where they don't score a one field goal for several minutes, and you see that happening frequently. So you might have a great quarter from the Heat, and then the next quarter you don't know what to expect on some games. Some games they play great, like game one against the Knicks.
Yeah,
but there are those stretches where it's a little troubling, to be honest with you. So I don't worry about it so much against the Pacers, but you did see in the finals how Spoelstra was, you know, we have to be honest, he was thoroughly outcoached by Rick Carlisle. And it'll be interesting to see what happens if they do advance. You know, what's the growth of Spoelstra as a coach when he does face off against Doc Rivers, or he faces off against Greg Popovich, a coach like that. So we're going to have to see that as well. He as well has to step up, Spoelstra. He has to make adjustments. He has to, a lot of people just want to give him credit when they're winning. But even still, you give credit to the big three when they win. But when they lose, the blame usually falls on Spoelstra. Sometimes it falls on LeBron as well. So it's kind of a difficult thing to give him too much credit or too little credit when it's a win or a loss. But I still do want to see that. I want to see how he adjusts as well. And the Pacers, I'm not going to put them down or anything, but this is a good training ground as well for Spoelstra as well, because this is a different team than the one that we just saw with the Knicks. This is more of a team-oriented, balanced attack. So I'm interested in seeing how Spoelstra reads this series as well.
Are you talking about those instances of the last 5 minutes of a game? Are you talking about those situations as when you're talking about Spo making some adjustments, or are you talking about something else?
Well, that's one thing. You know,
okay.
A lot of people like to concentrate on the results. And if the Heat lose a game by a couple of points, then the entire game was a disaster. And there's second guessing about every little thing. And I think there's another thing where he really didn't have any answer when J.J. Barea, when Tyson Chandler, when these kind of players changed the series in the finals. Not so much Dirk doing his thing. Mm-hmm. It was a good thing to see how the Heat kind of just shut down a player like Steve Novak, and it just erased him from the equation. Because you know Carmelo's going to get his points. You can put LeBron on him. You can put Shane on him. He's going to get his points. He's going to take 30 shots to get those points. and Dirk is kind of like that player too. They're good players, solid players. But it's those other players that turned that series around with the finals. And conversely, that exact same thing happened in 2006 when Pat Riley thoroughly outcoached Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson didn't have any answer to what Pat Riley was doing in that series. And it was the same thing last year with the finals. Even with a player like Cardinal, he started getting more minutes in that series. And that's when those kind of – a lot of people remember, you know, a great shot by Dirk. But it's the overall game that counts. And those kind of players – like Chandler, JJ, and Cardinal, those are the guys that were giving the Mavs the chance to either thoroughly beat the Heat or take them to a chance to beat the Heat in the fourth quarter in those final 5 minutes when every possession counts and everybody's looking at how every possession goes one way or another for the Heat. But what about that stretch during the second quarter when the Heat only makes one or two field goals for, I don't know, a 6 minute stretch? And we saw that against the Knicks. There was times when the Knicks were playing pretty good defense on the Heat.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that goes to maybe when you just have LeBron James on the court and just four bench players, or when you just have Wade and Bosch out there, or lately they've just had Wade alone with four bench players at the start of the second quarter and the fourth quarters. But I mean, I do get what you're saying. I mean, I would have taken out Mike Bibby from that entire equation much sooner. And I think you did see Rick Carlisle. As you said, putting in these players very quickly, and it seemed like Spo was more set in his ways, not slow to make those adjustments. I mean, and we all saw how atrocious Mike Bibby was in the playoffs. He just wasn't doing anything for you. But I guess he just kept him in there because the Heat had a 2-1 lead in the series. But just going back to this series, I think that there are some questions about Frank Vogel as a coach. I know that he took over that team last year when they weren't doing that well, and they and then they made the playoffs and actually gave the Bulls five tough games last year. But there were a lot of games that I felt that they were really in control in the fourth quarter against the Bulls, and they just gave them away. I mean, I know that the Bulls were the superior team, but they did some things that I just didn't know what the Pacers were thinking. Like, I think it was in game three of that Bulls-Pacers series, and I think the Pacers had like a pretty healthy lead in the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden Josh McRoberts starts acting like a point guard, and then the Bulls steal the ball from him, and then they run off a quick run, and then they win the game, even though I think the Pacers were pretty much in control of that game. I am interested to see how these two young coaches, they are young coaches, how they're going to play this chess match to put it like that. Because, I mean, I think you can say that both of these coaches have had some fair criticism put their way, and it'll be interesting to see how this series plays out, especially if the games are close.
Definitely. I do see them. I see what your point, too, because they have a little bit of an Atlanta Hawks in them, where it's a talented roster, but then they have these moments in the playoffs where things can kind of just fall apart rapidly. They do have a few players with playoff experience, like, mm-hmm. like a David West, mm-hmm. or
George Hill.
George Hill, exactly. Barbosa as well with Phoenix. Mm-hmm. So you do have a few players that do have that experience, but I don't think it compares at all to what the Heat have. As far as that goes. So moving on, let's say that I think the Celtics will pull through with the Sixers, but do you think the Sixers have a shot with the Celtics? Do you think it'll be a long series, hopefully, tire out the Celtics' old players? What are your thoughts on that series?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a post for Ha Hoops a few weeks before the season ended saying that the Heat should not go for the number one seed, because ideally you would have Chicago and Boston battling in the second round, yeah, to a game seven. And we obviously know how that story went out. But so you are going to have the Sixers against the Celtics. The one I am picking Boston in six in that series. But I think that one thing you have to keep an eye on with the old team like Boston is how those guys are going to stand up. And yeah,
I've already seen injuries too. Yeah. I mean, Ray Allen is still kind of a question mark. You have Paul Pierce as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely, it's a good point.
I mean, I think in that game six that they when they barely beat the Celtics, I think some people expected the Celtics to just blow the Hawks out in that game. But in that game, I only think KG was really the only player who looked good in that game. Everyone else didn't really look all that healthy or was moving all that well. I mean, even Rondo wasn't playing that well in that game. Now, I'm not saying you should base the whole series off one game, but I am picking them to win the series. But I think that's the one thing to keep your eye on. Is Paul Pierce going to have an injury, or is he going to be less than 100% in that series? And I think then you could see the Pacers maybe winning a third game and maybe pushing that to seven games. But I will say this, if Boston is healthy, then I think they could beat the Sixers in five games.
That's true. I would say, yeah, in five or six games, the Celtics do win. I think the Sixers are happy to be there. I think they were they won that series fair and square with Chicago. And I think they played good. And they were playing good the first, I want to say, first maybe 2-3 months of the season. Yeah. They were playing really good. But the season, the schedule of theirs was pretty light in the beginning. And I noted that. And I wasn't that shocked when they started falling a little bit lower down in the standings. But they have a lot of confidence now, and they're very happy to win that series. And I think you have that sense that they're just happy to be there. But they will give them a run for their money. I just don't see them if they are healthy, the Celtics. I don't see them beating the Celtics four times. All right, and turning the page, LeBron James is the MVP. I don't think anybody was really surprised by that. I think he had the MVP in the bag, but by the time he scored 17, I think it was 17 straight points against the Nets. I think that was kind of the little cherry on top. And I think it was kind of an indication too when Chandler got the Defensive Player of the Year, because I think LeBron had a solid shot at that, but they weren't going to vote for him for both of those things. Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of an indication as well of where everybody was going with that, because I think Chandler is a great player defensively. I think it was really dumb of the Mavericks to let him go. I really don't care what eventually happens this summer. Maybe they land a great player, maybe they don't, maybe they just settle for another type of player with their cap space. I think you had a great player that already fit into the system, that was a proven champion, that it worked, this system. I think it was foolish to let him go, and I think he had a great season with the Knicks. But I think overall there is no player like LeBron on both sides of the floor. I think Durant is a great player. I think players like Derrick Rose and Steve Nash, former MVPs, I think they're great players as well. But they don't do half of the things that LeBron does on defense as well. I think he's just a complete player. I think he really showed that this season. He came ready to play from game one. Yeah. Unlike other players like a Dirk Nowitzki, like Lamar Odom, that
Odom.
I don't know what they thought. I thought maybe they didn't think that there was going to be an NBA season, but there was a lot of players like that were kind of out of shape. LeBron brought it from day one and till the end. I think he only missed one game because of injury, maybe a few other ones at the end of the season just to rest. I mean, it was just a total package this season, and I think he ran away with the MVP. But he always likes to say that ever since he got to Miami that he's not here for the MVP. He's here for the championship. I think he says all the right things. But what do you think? I mean, was this something that really means a lot to him? Of course, he wants to win the championship. Of course, this isn't going to be some sort of distraction. But what are your overall thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that he really did sew this MVP up. I think it was, you know, in January when Wade missed a bunch of games and the Heat played well. I think he really sewed it up right there. I know people talk about KD, but I really think that LeBron start to finish had a phenomenal season. And the one moment where he didn't play that well, you had the Thunder playing well. And I think some people were saying, oh, well, I guess we have to give the MVP to KD now. I mean, I think that was just a thing for 2 weeks or something. But I really think that when you look at the season from start to finish, he was the MVP. He's the best player in the league. He's the MVP. And I think, I know he said that he's only concerned about winning a championship. And I'm sure that is his top priority. But I think he also understands and acknowledges that he is now one of 8 players in the history of basketball to win the MVP 3 times. And he's in some great company. And, you know, I think he knows that if he can maybe string together a couple of championships, he can really put his name up there. I mean, people talk about, you know, if the Lakers win a championship, does it make him equal to Michael Jordan? I think if LeBron James leads the Heat to a few championships, I think you can maybe eventually start to see him in that conversation, which is what people were saying when he was drafted. Can he be the closest thing to Michael Jordan? I think he is by far the best player in the game right now. It's not to say take anything away from anybody, including D. Wade, but even Wade said himself that he thinks LeBron James is the best player in the game. And I think you're starting to see, and I think, you know, as I said in the podcast to the first round, I think he's really serious this postseason. I'm not to say that he wasn't serious last year, but I think he knows no 3-time MVP has not won a championship. I think Wilt Chamberlain won the championship the year he won his 3rd MVP. So I think he knows where the history is. I think some people are saying, you know, does this put more pressure on him? I don't think possibly there could be any more pressure on him. I think he knows the company he's in, and he's going to try to live up to that this postseason.
Yeah, I as good as all the teams are that are left, and I think the Spurs and the Thunder, the Lakers, the Celtics, those are all really great teams, but they don't have somebody that can literally stop this man. I think if he if he plays up to his capabilities, which he has shown time and time again this season that he can, then the sky's the limit for him.
Yeah.
We can't predict the future. We don't know what will happen in these coming weeks. But he does have something. He does have a chance to do something special. And I think that was the whole point of coming to Miami.
Yeah.
I don't want to bash the Cavs, but I don't think you can be that shocked that he didn't win before with players like Drew Gooden, Wally Zerbiak, and Larry Hughes. He had a couple of years that he had good teams with him, but let's not forget that Michael Jordan didn't come into the league starting winning championships either.
Yeah.
And he's so young too, LeBron. He has so many years ahead of him. He's in his prime, but he's such a physical specimen that you really think about it. At what age does LeBron retire that he can't keep up with players anymore? Because I see him just like Magic came back and he became a power forward. He wasn't a point guard anymore. He was a little slower when he returned to the league. You can see a completely different facet of LeBron into his late 30s and maybe even be a solid player at 40. I think it's entirely possible with somebody like LeBron. I mean, you see somebody like Kurt Thomas or Dikembe Mutombo still in this league. And, you know, of course, they're just, you know, bench players by the end of their careers. But it's going to be really interesting to see how LeBron takes his game into his 30s. So you have a completely different other era of LeBron James that is not even around the corner. It's still kind of far away in the distance. I mean, he's really entering his prime right now.
Yeah.
And he's comfortable here. He's happy. He's got his friends on the team, but they're not just friends that are just, you know, yes men. And just have his back no matter what. I think it's good for him to have a player like Wade that will push him, and that isn't afraid to stand up to him. And I think it's good to have somebody like Pat Riley, so that he can mentor him. If I'm sure the door is always open for a player like LeBron at Pat Riley's office. So I think you're just now starting that new era of him in Miami. And I think he's happier with his family and all that. And this season is just the beginning, I think. I think the first season there was a lot of distractions, the media attention, him trying to feel his way around the team. I'm sure it was almost like a culture shock to be living in Miami after living his entire life in Ohio. so, yeah, I think the future is obviously bright for LeBron, no matter where he plays. But this is really it right now. In this playoffs, the door is I mean it's laid out perfectly for him to win his first ring. But we'll just have to see. For now, he has that MVP. I think he's gonna be happy to get it. I think it'll be a nice ceremony in front of the fans and all that. But of course, I see him just business as usual. He's gonna lace up his shoes and he's gonna have a great series against the Pacers.
Yeah, and just to say something right here, I'm not saying that the Heat are gonna win the next five championships. I'm just saying that I think that as you said, LeBron James is still young. He still has time. So we could be looking at an extended window, the so-called championship window for the Heat. I think we could see an extended time that window is open for the Heat to get. I mean, even in the Shaq-Wade era, the Heat only had 2 years to win a championship. They won it the second year. So, I mean, things happen. We all know that Wade got hurt in 05 in the conference finals. Who knows what would have happened that year if he wasn't hurt. But I'm not saying that he's going to win five championships. I'm saying that he still has a lot of time to win championships. And if he eventually wins a few, I think you maybe could see him put up in the conversation of, is he, the best ever? But that's a long way down the road. Yeah. I think for now we can just say he's the best player right now.
Definitely. You can only really look back on his career once it's said and done, and then you can truly compare him to the greats of the game. But I think at the age that he's at, I think he's off to a pretty good start. And so that wraps up this edition of the Hot Out Hoops podcast. Second round edition, if you want to call it that. Thanks for your insight, and hopefully we'll have another podcast at the conclusion of this round with more analysis for the next round, if everything goes according to plan.
Yeah. All right.
All right, man. Talk to you later. Bye.